Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast Half Full Editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Weintraub. How are you doing?
All right. Excellent. Yourself?
Pretty hot and hot, hazy.
Disgusting.
Humid. Yeah. Disgusting in New York.
Tropical, you could say.
Absolutely. It's almost like we're living in a rainforest, a city in the middle of a rainforest.
Jungly, for sure.
I don't think it's really out of character for New York summer, you know, to be so disgusting. And you think with this kind of weather, A, we'd be used to it, which we're not, and B, we would have more of a kind of tropical drinking history. Tiki drinks would be more popular here, but not really.
It never really worked out here for some reason, or at least it's had real ups and downs.
Absolutely. And I have this theory that President Donald Trump kind of cursed the Big Apple. He closed Trader Vic's, essentially, in the Plaza Hotel in the late 80s. He had unbelievably called it tacky.
Which, I mean, pot kettle.
Right, sure. A man known for his gold, you know, bathroom fixtures.
Yeah, exactly.
At that point, Trader Vic's in the Plaza had been open for about 25 years. Obviously, Trader Vic, French-Canadian.
Yeah, French-Canadian. He opened a hamburger joint in Oakland, California, in Emeryville, which is part of Oakland.
Was it Hinky Dinks or
yeah,
something?
Exactly. Yeah. In like 1933, and wasn't doing great until he went down to Hollywood and saw Don the Beachcombers, the first tropical bar in Hollywood. Then he traveled around a little, went down to the Caribbean and came back and started serving tropical drinks. And became very successful.
And that spawned, like, not only a chain of Trader Vic's, but really, like, a whole phenomenon, cultural movement, you know.
He was a natural salesman.
Really, like, in the 50s, you know, everybody thinks it was this amazing time for cocktails, but it wasn't a great time, really, except for maybe martinis and tiki drinks.
Yeah, those were the two poles, basically. You know, martinis, Manhattans, maybe.
Yeah.
Even those were kind of falling by the wayside.
Yeah.
It was either the cult of the dry martini or the tiki cult. And New York had some pretty deep roots with tropical stuff, too.
Yeah.
In the 1930s, you had the Hawaiian Room at the Hotel Lexington was hugely popular, and that had like live Hawaiian music and palm trees inside. And, you know, this is on Lexington Avenue and 53rd Street, which is not a tropical paradise around there by any means, mostly like big gray office buildings. That place was very popular, and there were a few other places.
Yeah,
there
sure.
were a couple tropical bars. There was Monty Prosers, who stole the zombie from Don Beach and promoted the hell out of it. The Hurricane Bar that might have invented the Hurricane cocktail.
And what I think is kind of amazing is that it wasn't just even drinks, it was food too. Like Trader Vic's, you know, the restaurant, you know, people would go there for dinner, cocktails. In 89, the restaurant, I guess it had already been closed for a year. The bar lived on. But when there were, you know, it was announced that Trump was closing the, you know, the last vestige of Trader Vic's Manhattan, you know, all these different people weighed in. Even Richard Nixon, like, issued a statement saying that his, you know, entire family would be sorry to see that it closed. Like, according to this amazing article in the Philadelphia Inquirer, I found, he said, "It was always our daughter's favorite restaurant. It quickly became mine, too." You know, and I love this image of, you know, Tricky Dick Nixon, you know, sitting there eating, you know, poo-poo platter.
Exactly.
Mai Tai.
Yeah, or scorpion bowl
the
that he's sharing with Nancy.
Neck. Right, exactly. It's not, although famously in another article I found in the Daily News, they did allude to an incident. I guess food was, I guess, mostly bland, and at worst, Yul Brynner once, like, got food poisoning, supposedly, from, like, the spare ribs there.
Ooh.
So, like, he never, I guess that was a famous incident.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with Yul Brynner.
See, I ate there a few times with my dad.
And how was it?
The food was not particularly good. My dad was a pretty establishment character, and you'd see a lot of other establishment characters there. It was not bohemian. Trader Vic's was expensive.
Right.
The food was sweet.
Right.
You know, it was covered in sweet, gloppy sauces. But it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had the tropical drink. I'd have, I can't remember what.
It's all the same.
Right? Yeah, it was all the same back, you know, I was probably in my early 20s.
I think it's funny because now we kind of see tiki cocktails as being kind of like a hipster thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where back in the heyday, it was really the man in the gray flannel suit, like after his job at like the advertising firm.
Yeah, it was the guy who, you know, in his early 20s was being shelled by Japanese heavy mortars on Peleliu, and then he comes back and goes to the tropical bar.
And isn't Trader Vic's like the original, like a lot of the bar in Oakland was covered with all types of ephemera, where's it
diving? Oh, yeah.
And a lot of it was being sent back by soldiers.
Yeah, there's a big Japanese rifle hanging over the bar of the Oakland one.
Yeah.
And it moved in 1972, but they kept all the stuff in the new location. And you go there now, and there's this Arisaka rifle with a bayonet. The thing is, like, long, and it's hanging over the bar. It's the first thing you see.
Wow.
And it's like, okay. Whiskey was so tightly allocated during the war, you had to take a lot of rum, which wasn't. And they used a lot of rum, but you know, their clientele still wanted whiskey. So the extra rum, they'd put in crates and send to whatever island we'd just captured.
Right.
And just say, send it to the officers' club.
Unbelievable.
Courtesy of Trader Vic's.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And like Coca-Cola, I know, had made a pledge to keep Coke. I think it was a nickel bottle, and that obviously help rum and Coke and
making that was
it very popular. And that song comes out, was it the Andrew Sisters or whatever it is?
Yeah, and I think Maury Amsterdam, who was on the Dick Van Dyke Show, had something to do with that song too, which is very funny. There were tiki bars in New York City, you know, and now, after Donald Trump's closing of that, things kind of haven't worked out so well.
There's a real, like, uproar when he announced that Trader Vic's was going to close.
Mm-hmm.
People fought it. Like, I found a quote from the Journal News that said, "Tacky or not, Trader Vic's, like the plaza itself, is a New York institution."
Mm-hmm.
People were very angry about its closing. You know, all of that anger kind of peters out about a year later or so.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump, I'm not sure why he wanted it closed. I don't, maybe just it seemed dated, I guess, at that point. I don't
Well, also, it was popular with all the people who hated him.
Right.
You know, all the establishment. Those people did not accept him. So take this, Henry Kissinger.
Right.
I'm closing your favorite restaurant.
And then it hangs on to like April. At that point, like the only story I could really find was a tiny one in the Daily News about how they had some last big charity event. Stuff was being auctioned off for like the Ronald McDonald House. And then it just sort of disappears. And that's April of 1990. There are a few tropical kind of tiki places that may be open and closed, but nothing seems to be able to stick around. I mean,
there are a couple tiki bars that are perennial, but they're barely tiki. You know, there's one in Brooklyn that has been open for a decade and a half, but it's a dive bar.
Right.
You know, it's not a real, like, full-on, we're doing everything tiki bar.
The Otto's Shrunken Head.
Right? Yeah, another like that. Those are, they're kind of tiki bars, but they're not like...
Like a they hybrid, don't have the, like a, like some kind of like, you know, tiki, you know, punk bar or something.
Yeah, like Zombie Hut in Brooklyn.
Right,
is like that. Yeah, and they're, you know, they're fine. They're fun bars, but but the whole Trader Vic's thing was this very elaborate. Like the real full tiki bar is always super elaborate decor, food, complicated drinks, you know, well executed.
Yeah. We've seen it in other cities. San Francisco has, you know, the award-winning Smuggler's Cove, right? Martin Cates.
Yeah, and there's a Forbidden Island in Oakland.
And you go and, you know, you go into Smuggler's Cove, you can get, you know, literally a flaming drink that, you know, four people can drink, but it's actually delicious. There's obviously still the Tonga Room inside the Fairmont. I think it was, people were going to try to close it, but it
It survived. It's still there, yeah.
I mean, it's a huge, huge bar.
It's got part of an actual sailing ship inside
of
it.
Yes, yes. And I think it was, I could be wrong, but I think it was the pool of the hotel.
Yeah.
And, like, a band comes out on the little island and then retracts.
Yeah.
And you sit around, the table sit around, and the drinks come in these giant, amazing,
they're not very good, but they are big.
No, I tried a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I won't say what bartender, but he was like, great place to go, order beer in a bottle.
Yeah.
Like, not even in a glass, just a bottle.
Yeah.
I don't think he's wrong. I mean, most of the drinks were pretty terrible. But on the other hand, like Smuggler's Cove, you know, is obviously famous for their, you know, wonderful drinks. They have an amazing rum selection.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole society that I think if you try enough of them, you get inducted and you get to wear like a cool little fez hat. You know,
yeah.
Seems very Trader Vic to me.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is this is all in San Francisco,
right,
where the climate could not be more different from, say, the Solomon Islands.
Or further from the Caribbean.
Yeah. Right. And in New York here, the climate in the summer is exactly like it was on Guadalcanal.
So you're absolutely right. And there's a whole new...
Hot. It's disgusting.
There's a whole new kind of generation of tiki bars that have opened. I mean, I guess Smuggler's Cove really has kind of kicked that off when it opened. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, Chicago, which also, I mean, frozen tundra there, you know, six months of the year, maybe 8 months. But you have, you know, Three Dots and a Dash, Lost Lake,
which is lovely. Yeah.
And I mean, it's one of these things where it's so cold and gray there that people want some kind of escape, you know, that they're looking for holiday in a glass, but I don't know.
But I mean, we've had so many attempts here in New York. The great Julie Reiner, the absolutely wonderful bar owner, had Manikai, which wasn't full on tiki, but it had tiki drinks and it was tropical and lovely place, excellent food.
Yeah.
And it just didn't really catch on.
I thought of all of them, that one probably had the best shot.
Oh, yeah.
Julie grew up in Hawaii.
Like, yeah, she knew everything about this.
Brian Miller, who's, you know, well-known New York bartender who's sort of addicted to tiki culture. It was so set up to succeed. And, you know, it's one of those things in New York where I think you just have all the elements and it doesn't work out. And sometimes you have all the elements and it becomes an international sensation.
It's got me kind of wondering if it has something to do with New Yorkers.
Maybe.
You know, because you think of people who come to New York, you know, most people who live here aren't native, or at least most people who live here and can afford to go to expensive tiki bars. You know, they've come here for something. They've come here to be New Yorkers. And part of that image of New Yorker isn't like wandering around in a tiki shirt and shorts and maybe a number of extra pounds that you put on by eating poo-poo platters and drinking scorpion's fangs and all that stuff. It might be a little outside of the self-image of the New Yorker to...
Well, it doesn't fit with like the, you know, the sort of slow, easy nature of tiki, you know, where you're kind of relaxing and time moves slowly. We never shut down, you know, fast lane, drinks, you know, slamming down three martinis, you know, in an hour, you know, it doesn't fit. And I think you're right, because a lot of the people also visiting New York, they're not coming here to have Mai Tais hang out, like put their toes in the Gowanus, God forbid. But they're here.
It's a good way to lose your toes. Right?
You know, they want, you know, a martini in, you know, Times Square. They want a Manhattan.
They want that different.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And make-believe experience. They want the 1930s skyscraper movie experience. Men with fedoras and women with strings of pearls and all that.
Exactly. I mean, it is funny because as the tiki movement itself petered out in New York, I think in a lot of New York Chinese restaurants sort of picked up, you know, aspects of tiki. So like through the 80s and 90s, you could find thoroughly not Chinese food in Chinese restaurants.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The poo-poo platter, the spare ribs, you know, scorpion bowls. Like, for some reason, there was this weird kind of hybrid Chinese, yeah. Tropical.
It gave you the culinary experience without the worrying kitsch.
Right. Right. And then you could also get lo mein if you wanted.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
I remember, you know, as a kid going to, you know, all these different Chinese restaurants. And it didn't really seem discordant at the time, but now it seems a little weird.
Yeah.
You pair some giant, you know, flaming drink with, you know, an egg roll. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, I was living out in the suburbs in the 70s when I was going to high school, and we always went to the same, the Polynesian,
right.
Chinese Polynesian
right,
restaurant.
Exactly.
Like China and Polynesia right. have anything to do with each other. You know?
Right.
It's always just weird. Okay.
Maybe it's something about tiki where it almost has to, like, graft onto a host. You know,
yeah.
Like, it's not,
yeah, yeah.
Like, because so much of it is mythical
and fantasy. New York's a tough host, I think.
Right, and so much of the, like, drinks Trader Vic or Don Beach kind of dreamed up themselves and
mm-hmm.
dreamed up, you know, what Americans thought Polynesia was, not based upon our experience of going to Polynesia,
no.
but what we believe Polynesia to be
yeah.
created tiki, so it's...
With them, and the drinks were all basically Caribbean,
right.
you know. But with different names
right.
and some...
The people in Polynesia drink rum. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
They have orange juice. We don't know.
We don't know.
Like,
it doesn't matter. We've never been.
Is it? Do they drink flaming drinks? They're pyromaniacs.
They do now.
Right. And it's... So, you know, I think when... Especially as we've gotten ever more serious about
yeah.
cocktails, like, you can go the route of, like, Smuggler's Cove, where down in, you know, New Orleans, our friend Beach Bum Berry, you know, Chef Berry, who's... tried to solve some of the Don Beach riddles for his
yeah.
recipes.
He's the historian of the industry,
right,
of
and,
the tiki
you know,
industry.
And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, secrecy between Trader Vic and Don Beach about some of their recipes mm-hmm. and trying to figure out what was actually in the zombie. But that's one aspect.
Yeah, I mean, the tradition is gaudy and colorful.
Right.
It's not that deep.
I'm encouraged that there's a whole new generation of bars in New York, right? Like,
yeah.
when we were talking about Brian Miller, like, for a long time after he left Lanny Kai and before that, he was at Death & Co. He is Mr. Tiki here, and you mm-hmm. know, he has a new bar called the Polynesian, of course, in which is part of the Major Food Group, which also redid the space. It's not the Four Seasons restaurant, but it's the two restaurants inside of what was the Four Seasons
right.
restaurant. You know, that's on top of the Pod Hotel on the far west side. So.
It's funny they're calling it the Polynesian because
yeah.
Polynesio or Polynesian is the name of the tiki bar the Cuban government opened in the Trader Vic's space when they took over the Havana Hilton. So
that was pretty funny.
It's, I think, I just realized that.
Right.
I said, wait a minute. You know, it's funny they call it that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see how the Polynesian works out.
Yeah.
It's a major investment. It's,
yeah.
you know, it worked in Chicago with Three Dots and a Dash,
yeah.
which was a major investment by the Let Us Entertain You group.
Right. It's not,
and,
you know, not that different.
Which is not that different, right. And the Major Food Group has made its bones here in New York by taking old New York institutions and reimagining them, like for modern consumption, such as the Red Sauce Italian joint,
oh, yeah.
the steakhouse,
right.
the you know the Four Seasons
yeah, yeah.
is a major thing. But
yeah.
We'll see the oyster,
yeah.
the oyster bar, things like that. We'll see how this works.
And then you have other places like Mother of Pearl and Diamond Reef and
mm-hmm.
some smaller ones that are kind of maybe not full-on tiki, but embrace aspects of tropical.
Yeah.
I mean, even New Orleans.
Yeah, Latitude 29.
And then also you have Cane and Table, which is from the Neil Bodenheimer and, you know.
And that's more kind of a...
Well, they call it like proto-tiki. I think they
yeah.
I think they were going to open up a tiki. They run Cure, which is just won the James Beard Award for best bar program in America in Uptown New Orleans, and they were going to open up a tiki bar, and I think Beach Bum announced that he
yeah.
was going to open
yeah,
his own.
Yeah, like, all right, we're not going to compete
like,
with
no,
that.
And they were like, no, okay,
yeah.
let's
do
back up.
Little...
So there's like kind of a what they call proto-tiki, which I think in some ways is better because it gives them more freedom
yeah,
to do whatever
exactly.
they want. You know, like it.
It's
know,
less, they have to worry less about the kitsch.
Right.
And they can focus a little more on the execution of what
right,
they're
exactly.
making. Yeah.
So. And Beach Bum has definitely gone full kitsch. It looks like you've gone back to
yeah.
the 60s or 70s in there. I was very excited when Lanny Kai opened and I, you
mm-hmm.
know, I went there quite a bit. And I am encouraged that like we have these new generation of tiki bars. I still feel like Trump's curse may haunt us.
Yeah. I'd like to see one way around it is New York has such a great maritime history.
Oh, that's
you know, we always sailed down to the Caribbean. We
people,
New York was the biggest port in America.
Right.
And, you know, if you did like a waterfront bar, you know, like ports of call is your theme, something like that, that kind of taps into the wanderlust of the New Yorker, but makes it a little more... And about us.
And the Northeast, you know, back in the day in colonial times.
Oh, it was.
I mean, there are a lot of rum distilleries.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, there's that horrific molasses flood that, you know, swamps Boston at the end
of the... I'm sorry, I do have to laugh. I know. Yeah, it was terrible.
It was terrible. I mean, it was really
But also crazy. Very funny.
Yeah,
it was, in 1919, these huge storage tanks full of molasses, you know, 30, 40 feet high. Rupture
and
a heat wave.
Be used for rum.
Yeah, but they were trying to get in some last rum distilling before Prohibition, and
it literally like just a tidal wave of molasses
ran through the North End,
just destroyed the North End. Which we have a great story that our rum expert Wayne Curtis wrote a couple of years ago for the Daily Beast, and it's one of the,
it was horrible. People died.
Yeah, I mean it's one of the,
they drowned in molasses, which kind
of
sucks.
It's one of the weirdest historical events that I can think of. I mean, it's just, you can't make it up.
I used to go up to Boston a lot in the 70s and 80s, and on a hot day in the North End, it still smelled like molasses back then. I think it's gone by now.
Yeah.
But
so
that
permeated.
Was, you know, that was 50 years afterwards. So,
wow. Yeah.
60 years afterwards.
But getting back to your idea, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we're so close. There's so many New Yorkers who have come from, you know, the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic. If anywhere, we should have, you know, a tropical bar. It should be here. But, you know.
But I mean, we could make it maybe a little less kitschy, which is and a little more New York-y.
Right, absolutely.
The service would be
a little bit more
faster.
Sophisticated.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just wondering how you appeal to New Yorkers on this same ground. Because we'll see what happens with Polynesian. I hope it works.
Yeah. I mean, there was, you know, Painkiller, you know, a couple of years ago, which then, you know, the Giuseppe Gonzalez. And,
that one burnt out very quickly. It was a great bar, though.
Yeah, it was a great, and they had a lot of frozen, almost ahead of their time.
Yeah, and that was kind of, that one, I think, would have had legs. They closed, not for business reasons, because that one was very tied into 1970s New York.
Right.
And punk rock, and Puerto Rican New York, and, you know, this real, like, deep into the DNA of New York.
Yeah.
And I think that's the stuff that succeeds best here.
Yeah.
Other stuff, theme stuff, doesn't do so well.
Yeah.
I mean, there are exceptions,
sure.
But usually it's looked at as being for tourists and people don't like it.
And I think that also at this point, it's sort of like some of the molecular mixology or gastronomy that in itself, those bars or restaurants weren't successful, but aspects of that type of drink making or cooking have now entered the general, you know, restaurants and bars so that, you know, you can find frozen drinks, you know, at, you know, a lot of bars in New York now around the country, you know, that are good, that are, you know, kind of almost ironic, but then past the point of being ironic and now are just.
Well, it's
coding.
That same attention to detail, you know, that makes a bar like Latitude 29 so successful is. You go in, and yes, it's got, like, kitschy tiki drinks, but then you taste them, and they're just wonderful.
Yeah.
These things are well thought out. They're balanced. They're not just a bunch of fruit juice dumped into a clay mug with a grimacing deity on it.
Right.
You know, there's actual thought that goes into it.
Maybe the key is to have all of those drinks, but serve them in coupes and rocks glasses.
There you go.
You know, like
there
play, you go. You know, I'm not sure people would even notice.
Yeah.
Like you could just have the same menu, but just present it like it was a total normal bar.
Yeah.
And people would love it. I mean,
play 1950s jazz. You know?
Right, exactly. I don't know how our idea would go over with some of the tiki faithful.
They would not enjoy that so much. Some of my dearest friends are complete stone tiki people.
When you say
it takes
that,
a special person to do that.
They literally will show up at every party, every event in full on tiki. Like I don't mean like they're not like dressing like the dude from the Big Lebowski. I mean
no,
they are dressing like a sophisticated world traveler in the 50s on a Braniff Airlines in Hawaii. You know what I mean? Like, they are...
Who's just been to Hawaii and bought the best shirt at the best stop, at the best shop.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, these are, like, not cheap clothing. This is, like... High antique.
Oh, they collect vintage Hawaiian shirts.
Right.
They would not be happy, but in New York, it's not a huge community, you know?
I think, to be honest, that a lot of these bars have gone out of their way to satisfy that group.
Yeah.
And that group, like, isn't big enough to really sustain a full bar, right?
Yeah, that's what I've seen over the years. You know, it's a great group, and they have the best parties in New York, and you know, some of the most interesting people I know. But in New York, it's a real, like, it takes a real commitment to live like that. You know, it's
and the sheer number of, like, drinks that you need to serve to pay the rent and everything is just I mean, maybe in other cities you could get away with that.
Yeah, you can have a smaller crowd.
And, or you could do like a real serious tiki bar inside of another bar or something like a.
But in New York, it's just you got to make bank.
Yeah, as much as I hate to say this, maybe Trump was right. Maybe it is too tacky. Like I don't know.
No, we just don't deserve it. That's all it is. That's all it is. We just don't deserve it. We'll see what happens.
But these things come and go too. Yeah. I mean, like what is tacky and what's not is constantly changing. So,
I mean, for a while, the sleeve garter and huge bushy beard and vest was considered to the height of cool.
Right.
Now it looks tacky.
Right.
You know, so there's that.
I mean, who knows? The pendulum may swing back. Well, either way, I think it's time for a tiki drink. This weather is definitely inspiring.
Yeah, I think a missionary's downfall for me.
Exactly. Giant Mai Tai.
Yeah.
Would be a nice way to finish out the day. And
oh, boy, does that sound pleasant.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.